Waters. May it please the court, Edward Waters for appellants. Your Honor, this is a complicated case and a complicated statute, obviously, but I thought some historical perspective would be appropriate to start this morning. Our client, the Ohio Head Start Association, and the other associations that are appellants here, worked long and hard, and I think it's important to clarify some of the record on this in this case also, from 1998, which was the prior reauthorization of the Head Start Act, to 2007, which is the reauthorization of the Head Start Act that has the provisions we'll be talking about today. Those associations worked long and hard, and particularly Barbara Haxton, the executive director of the Ohio Head Start Association, worked long and hard to advocate for improvements to the quality of the program. In fact, she is cited throughout the legislative history as somebody advocating for a quicker process to remove and replace poor performing grantees. And I think that's really important in terms of context, because there's been many suggestions that we're here today to just kind of preserve our funding and not make any changes to the program. And in fact, what's so ironic is that we were the ones advocating for the changes to the Head Start program.
If you won, didn't you?
Yes, well, it's buyer's remorse, Your Honor.
Be careful what you ask for, you might get it.
Yeah, yes, especially in Washington, D.C. But what happened in 2007, and really before 2007, there was this system of on-site reviews that is important to this case as well. That system had been in place for at least 20 years. It's a system that's designed to monitor the compliance of these programs with the some 1,500 or 1,800, a huge number of regulations that apply to the Head Start program. It's a compliance monitoring system. That system had lots and lots of problems, as Congress pointed out. It was unreliable, so seriously flawed, so on and so forth. The Congress and we advocated for a system of not compliance-based system, but a system of making qualitative judgments about the services provided to children and families by these Head Start programs. And that's this designation renewal system. And what is premised on is the idea that most Head Start programs do a very good job, and they provide high-quality services. It's also premised on a clear policy of Congress that to replace these programs is a really big deal, very expensive. The investment of these communities in 45 years of these Head Start agencies shouldn't be tossed out by the communities, the investment by the federal government, and so on and so forth.
So if you were seeking this change,
why are we here?
Well, not exactly that. I understand some part of why you're here. But if you were seeking this change, what's the property interest that's at stake?
I'm not sure I see the connection. You're on the property interest here, and I do want to get into the due process issues, but the property interest is the way this system is set up. It's almost like, I think in contract law you call it an evergreen provision, but you have a five-year contract. At the end of that 5 years, if you are found to be high quality, you get another 5 years, and at the end of that 5 years, another 5 years, and so on and so forth. As long as you meet this high quality standard, you have
continued funding. Don't you go into it always knowing that this is a contract with a government which can change its future criteria or abolish altogether the program at any time and take away that? You don't have that other 5 years. I mean, you're dependent upon the state of the law 5 years down the road as to whether you get it or not.
Is that not the case? Certainly that's the case, Your Honor, but that's the case
right.
For any...
Therefore, how do you have a property right that's protectable in this act?
Your Honor, if every property right was premised on the fact that there had to be an Appropriations Act which would apply to any entitlement program, then there would be no property interest in any of those programs.
Right, either. Bingo. Right.
Well, but there is a
rather circuitous, counsel. Saying, well, we have a property right because we expect the government not to take it away. Therefore, there must be a property right because the government would have to take it away for us not to have a property right. That, I can't get there from here.
Your Honor, I think if the court found that there was no property interest because Congress might change the law, then that would be contrary to virtually every case in the last 40 years.
I think you're starting in the wrong direction.
Okay. Yes.
It's not that there's no property right because Congress might change the law. You haven't established a property right.
Well, the property
right. You established it. Couldn't Congress abolish it constitutionally? They could do away with the whole program, right?
Yes, they could, Your Honor.
Constitution. And you wouldn't be entitled to fair compensation, just compensation for anything beyond your first 5 years, would you?
No, you wouldn't, Your Honor. But
and we're not contrary to the whole history of the Constitution, are we, if we say that?
Your Honor, Matthews v. Eldridge.
Matthews v. Eldridge provides due process for the deprivation of a property right. Matthews v. Eldridge has nothing to do with the creation of a property right.
Your Honor, I think the statute creates a property right by having this continued walk of funding that is no different than the AFDC program that was in Goldberg or the disability program in Matthews. It is the same thing in the sense that there is continued funding provided you meet criteria, and it's the application of criteria that creates a property interest, which clearly Congress wanted criteria here, and those criteria were then effectuated through these regulations. You know, I don't think the court needs actually to go any farther than the Administrative Procedure Act, Your Honor, to rule for us in this case, because these regulations are clearly arbitrary and capricious. I don't think we need to get into a lot of levels of Chevron deference and so on and so forth when you have a set of regulations that are so obviously contrary to what Congress said in the statute, which was to look at program reviews as part of the data that you're collecting and making these qualitative judgments, and then taking those program reviews, not the results of this discredited on-site review process, but the data collected. That's what Congress said, and this agency never addressed what Congress said, never addressed the fact that this was a system, this compliance system with lots and lots of problems. All they did was say, really double down on this system, and in the rulemaking record said there's nothing wrong with the on-site review process. We think it's great. It's been good for years, and you guys should have known that you're essentially a bad actor if you had one of these deficiencies. And there's nothing in the rulemaking record that explains why a federal agency would take very clear report of the committee that has jurisdiction over this agency and ignore it. And I think that is all we need to do today to find that find for the appellants here. And I think that's where the district court was clearly in error. Process, by the way, that Congress laid out in the statute is unusual, to say the least. And I think it expresses some concern of Congress over the fact that this agency has had lots of problems in administering the Head Start program. I mean, I'm not sure that there's any other federal statute where you have an expert panel, strict timelines, reports to Congress, and all this other stuff to try to get to the right result of this new system. And the right result was to do a qualitative judgment. The expert panel that was appointed, their recommendations were wholly ignored, as we lay out. And the reason they were wholly ignored is also clear, we think, in the record, which is there was a change in administration. The new administration had one goal in mind, which was to maximize competition. And there's nothing wrong with maximizing competition. It's what this country was built on.
Right.
But that's not what Congress wanted here. And if they wanted to maximize competition, they should have gone back to Congress and changed the law.
Was the agency prohibited from diverging from the expert panel's recommendation, or did they simply have to explain it?
And have a clear rationale, which is, again, a rather unusual provision of a federal law, the clear rationale. And what their rationale was on the issue of the single deficiency was simplicity. Simplicity is not part of the statute. The statute was reliable, fair, transparent, none of that. And what Congress again said very clearly when you're using these program reviews, the one thing you shouldn't do is count up these deficiencies. It is not an exercise in bean counting, Your Honor. It was an exercise in this making this new system of quality-based judgments about these programs. And the reason we're here today, getting back to the original question, is because we don't think the system does anything of the kind. It's inconsistent with what Congress wanted, inconsistent with the expert panel, and it was clearly based on a motivation that is not part of this system. There was supposed to be minimal competitions. And the last thing I'll say for my last few seconds, I think it's really important here also, is that what Congress set up here is a system of determining who's low quality. And once you're low quality, obviously you should not have a leg up in any competitions. You should have a leg down. If you look at the statute, the criteria for deciding who's going to compete, there's a priority provision that says we're going to give priority to programs that have effectively provided early childhood education services. It makes no sense, as the government has argued throughout, and including the rulemaking record, this competition is no big deal because, and it's really been the law of this circuit going back many years, that when you affect the competitive position of a contractor, and in this case really a grantee, that's a big deal. And what Congress did was say, we're going to separate the world into high quality and low quality. And if you're low quality, we think you probably have to work really hard to prove that you should continue to be a provider of Head Start services.
Thank
I think
I'm out of time, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Christine Cole with the Department of Justice on behalf of the Secretary. I'd like to respond first to Mr. Waters' contention that the rule that was adopted through a lengthy notice and comment rulemaking process is arbitrary and capricious. Their argument really focuses on only one aspect of the total set of regulations, and that's the so-called single deficiency trigger. Counsel for the appellants contends that Congress spoke very clearly in the statute itself and indicated that adopting a condition such as the single deficiency trigger was off limits. I have to say I've looked at the statute quite closely again and again, and I can't find anywhere in which Congress itself said that. In fact, there are two places in the statute itself where the Congress refers to one or more deficiencies as having significant consequences. One of those provisions, it's 42 U.S.C. 9836A, C1C, little I, and that's cited in our brief, and that's where it provides that if you have one or more deficiencies, you are required to have a follow-up review within about 12 months thereafter. A second and perhaps even more significant provision of the statute is in 9836AE, and that deals with the termination process, and it quite clearly reflects there that if there is one deficiency, you can be terminated from the program. So the notion that Congress somehow thought that the reliance on a single deficiency was totally inappropriate is just flatly wrong. It's also contradicted by the fact that Congress did require, as Mr. Waters points out, that the agency provide two reports to Congress during the course of the rulemaking, one at the notice of proposed rulemaking stage and a second report just as the rule was being finalized. And in the first report to Congress, that's the one where the agency explained fully why it was not going to agree with the one of the recommendations of the advisory committee. I'll digress a minute and note that the agency adopted in full or in large measure virtually every one of the 17 recommendations that the advisory committee made. But the one area of disagreement is on the single deficiency trigger. And what the advisory committee recommended was that two standard deviations from the mean be the measure or the determining factor as to when a current grantee would need to compete for its new grantee. And in fact, HHS did consider that kind of mechanism, but the advisory committee, first of all, didn't explain why two standard deviations, why not one, why not three, how is this going to work? And as the agency explained in its report to Congress, that's a very complicated process. It's a statistical concept, and it's contrary to what Congress explicitly required in the development of the DRS, the designation renewal system, and that is that the system be transparent to everyone, to the families who use these Head Start services, to the public at large, to the providers. And trying to come up with and figure out for each cohort, every time there's a grant renewal, which it's on a sliding scale. The grants are for 5 years, but not all grants come up for renewal at the same time. So you've got a different cohort, a different year, and you have to do a calculation for every year. That's not transparent. It's also not uniform across all grantees, which both Congress and the advisory committee itself recommended. So the advisory committee's recommendation that the agency use this two standard deviations from the mean, which frankly I have no idea what that means, that's complicated, and I don't see how that can be possibly considered transparent, reliable, valid, something that everyone can rely on with certainty. Something else that Mr. Waters mentioned, he concedes that the monitoring systems for these programs have been in place for many, many years. That really undercuts significantly the appellant's arguments that they didn't know what they were supposed to comply with. I mean, they've always had to comply with a very detailed set of performance standards. So the notion that somehow this was something new is absolutely incorrect.
Mr. Waters seems to be arguing that the point of this reauthorization was actually to move away from compliance monitoring towards some kind of qualitative measure.
Well, it certainly didn't move away from monitoring because the statute quite clearly includes four different types of reviews. There is a triennial review that's required. There's a review that's required the first year after a new grantee has come into the program. There's the review that I mentioned a short time ago, that if there's been one or more deficiencies, there's a required follow-up review 12 months later. And then the final category of monitoring and reviews is the unannounced site visit, for example. So it's true that Congress said, look at the total picture, but that's precisely what HHS has done. And there's a lot of discussion here because the only thing that the appellants challenge is the single deficiency trigger. But I would point out that there are also six other conditions that can require a current grantee to go through the competitive process for a new five-year grant. And the regulations also quite clearly state, and this is quoted in our brief as well, I think it's the regulation that's 1307.7. It says that the administrator will look at all of the relevant data, including the monitoring reports, including audits and financial records, and including their performance. And in fact, there's a document that appellants refer to in their brief, which is not in the administrative record, but it does contain some interesting information that supports the government's position. It shows that past performance only counts for about 20 out of, I believe, 150 points in the competition. So the notion that appellants have repeatedly expressed that somehow because they got these deficiencies and they were forced to compete, this was a bad spot on their record and that they would be greatly disadvantaged. That's just absolutely not true. The rulemaking record and the regulations and the preamble for them reflects quite clearly that they're indeed encouraged to compete. The competition is an opportunity for a grantee that may have had some problems in the past to demonstrate that it really is stepping up to the plate and providing the high quality and comprehensive service that these children and their families deserve and that, frankly, the taxpayers deserve for the money that they're putting into these programs. So this competitive process is a good thing. Just a few days ago, HHS released the tentative results of the first round of competition, and that shows that of the current grantees who were forced to compete, and that was about 130 or so of them, 64% have been tentatively awarded their entire grant money, and another 11% got a portion of it. So that's 75% of those who were designated for competition were able to demonstrate in this competitive process that they will be able to provide a comprehensive and high quality service as Congress intended. Thank you, Your Honors. We ask that the district court's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Mr. Waters had no time left. We'll give you a couple of minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sorry, I went over. Just to clarify two points. Section 9836 of the statute, that is the on-site review statute, provision of the statute. 9836, period, is the provision we're talking about. 9836C created this new system. 9836A, capital A, old system. Congress said that system, badly broken. That's thing one. Thing two on the competition, it is almost fanciful to say that Congress would set up this elaborate process of deciding, and if you did it right, who's high quality and who's low quality. And it's fanciful to say that if you're low quality, that you're going to want to make awards to those programs. Why would the federal agency that made a determination that you're doing a bad job give you an award? And these numbers, we don't know exactly what these percentages are, because there's been no additional information, but obviously a number of grantees lost their grants, a number didn't get their whole grants back, and the fact that they're in the pool at all is really the issue here. And when you have 150 points and we're starting, and I think the answer is actually not 20 points, but 45 out of the 150 are at risk, that is a huge competitive disadvantage. It's not a level playing field competition, Your Honors. It's a competition that's designed to take into account.
Well, you don't want a level playing field, though. You're asking for no competition at all, right?
No, Your Honor, that's absolutely not. And that's why I said the history here is our clients have advocated for a system.
Never mind what they've advocated
for.
In this case,
Your Honor,
in this case, your objection is to having to compete for the grant, as opposed to being able to get the grant without competition, right?
My objection is having the fickle finger of fate, so to speak, decide whether you're low quality or not, as opposed to...
Come back to what I'm asking you about. What you're saying is your rights have been violated because you have to compete for the grant instead of getting it without competition. Is that not correct?
Our rights have been violated on the
first... Is that a yes or a no? Is that what you're saying is the violation of your right, is having to compete for the grant?
Having to compete for the grant, yes, Your Honor.
That right, fine. See how easy that was to answer?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You're not looking for a level playing field. You're looking for no playing field.
Because Congress didn't want a level playing field.
You're now telling me why. Okay.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.